once that murder took place, that gruesome murder and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, somebody that I knew, had interviewed a couple of times, talked to on other occasions, I mean, that really opened a window on what the hell is going on in Saudi Arabia. A lot of people that really weren't paying close attention to our ally in the Middle East suddenly were. And so we were able to mount this production and worked on it for the last year. We're coming up on the anniversary of his death. But it's interesting to note that this was a guy who had great hope that Mohammed bin Salman was a great reformer. And he supported him. He supported his war in Yemen. He supported him when he talked about economic reform, diversifying the economy and whatnot. And then slowly over time, he began to have a different opinion of young Prince Mohammed, MBS, until he is working for the Washington Post, writing critical columns, and then, of course, murdered in the consulate in Istanbul.
You know Khashoggi, why did he change his view of leadership?
Well, I think he saw friends of his that were being arrested and imprisoned for basically doing not much of anything except speaking out. And Khashoggi was a guy who had been an insider in Saudi Arabia, close to the elites, had been a spokesman even in the embassy in the United Kingdom. And so he knew the royals. He wasn't royal himself, but he knew them. He didn't understand that when MBS came along and talked about reform, that the people that he knew that were friends of his were going to be arrested, including himself. I mean, he was censored for simply criticizing Donald Trump. And he didn't really criticize Donald Trump. He just said, you know, we should be concerned, about who this new president is and be careful and not get our hopes up too high. That was enough to get him a phone call that said, you can't write, tweet, or be on TV anymore. And eventually he left the country.
And then there's the murder, which happens in Turkey at the Saudi consulate, I believe.
Yeah, he'd gone to the consulate to get some paperwork done so that he and his fiancée could get married. His wife had asked for a divorce, his previous wife, because of his columns in the Washington Post. She was scared. She was staying in Saudi Arabia, and she was nervous. So she asked for a divorce. Meanwhile, Jamal found a new love in this Turkish academic that had an interest in Arab politics, an intellect like Khashoggi's. And he was simply going there to the consulate for the sake of love, because he wanted to get papers so he could get married. And he's not there long before he's being murdered and cut into pieces.
How far do you take this investigation? Do you meet with Turkish officials? Do you confront the crown prince while you're in Riyadh?
I did. I had this interesting encounter. I'd been working for a year to get him to sit down and go on camera. And he was just playing, he was coy, and we had this sort of texting relationship. You see it in the film, actually. We put up some of my texting exchanges with him. But it wasn't until I went to a sporting event as part of the showcase for their reforms. They ran this big electric car race, Formula E, it's called. And I encountered him there in a gathering of the Saudi elite, and I went up to him and I started talking to him about the war in Yemen. And before I could get to it, he starts unprompted talking about the murder. And he says, oh, it was a big mistake. And I said, yeah, and you're the one in charge, so it all comes to you, right? And he says, yeah, I get all the responsibility for it. It happened under my watch. And then he said, oddly, I don't want to say I did it or that I didn't do it, but I get all the responsibility. And he said some other things. So, that's in the documentary. He's not on camera when he's saying those things. He's saying those to me when we were standing at this party, this event, and my cameraman was outside a few hundred yards away. In any case, I did talk to him about it, and it was an interesting exchange. We had met before, so when I walked up to him, he knew me. We had met back just after Trump was elected or inaugurated back in early 2017. So you know, and we had texted over the last the year before that. It was, you know, and then I talked to the foreign minister. You know, it did happen on in a consulate, so foreign minister has responsibility. And I pressed him on just what had happened and who was involved. And they give a lot of nonsensical answers, frankly. Really, you'll see it in the program. And I think that anybody who watches that program sees that they're backpedaling and, you know, they're forever sort of changing their story. They're really uncomfortable with this, and they're not coming clean. And they insist that there's no way that the Crown Prince could have authorized anything like this. And they say this before there's even they admit that the investigation is not complete, but they say that there's no way that the Crown Prince could have been involved, which doesn't quite make sense before you finish your investigation.
Do you get the sense, because they wield the power, that they are above the law and they won't be held accountable? And so therefore, do they really genuinely care?
Well, they would like this to go away. And I think they believed back in December of 2018, when I last saw the Crown Prince and talked to him and had that conversation that I just described, that this was going to, you know, fly by. This was going to, you know, this was, you know, it's like the Chinese with Tiananmen Square. They kind of just sort of put their heads down and went back to work, and eventually people stop talking about it. And I think they thought with the Khashoggi business that it would go away. The difference, I think, with Khashoggi is that this was a columnist for a major Washington, D.C. newspaper that pledged itself to not forget this. And so they haven't. And I want to say something really important here, and that is that Khashoggi is just one thing that's happened in Saudi Arabia. There are women in prison who have been tortured and sexually abused. There are a number of writers, academics, even poets and economists who've been rounded up for very specious sort of vague charges. You can't get good answers. They often spend time in jail without any trials taking place or even any charges being filed. They're just held for long periods of time. So the human rights record of Saudi Arabia is pretty abysmal, and it's, you know, Jamal Khashoggi, unfortunately, is dead, but there's live Saudis, like women who've asked for the certain rights, that are in prison today. And we should care about those that are alive and still could be freed.
As a journalist, and you've traveled to Saudi Arabia so many times, you have met face-to-face with the Crown Prince, do you fear for your life in any way as you're poking around into this story?
Well, no, I don't, because I think that for them to hurt me, I think they would probably decide against doing that, because it's just going to cause them more world of hurt. Now, somebody could say that's naive and that they don't care. I suppose that's possible. But, you know, I'm a journalist and I've covered wars and I've covered, you know, I've been in some dicey situations. So it's part of the job, and I'm not going to make a big deal about that. I don't feel, I've talked to a lot of Saudi officials, and my job is to ask them hard questions and not worry about safety.
Any reason you suspect why the Trump administration has not been putting more pressure on the Saudis to come up with more answers?
You know, we don't know what they've done behind the scenes, and we gotta hope that some officials, like Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, may have pressured the Crown Prince to come forward a bit. But it doesn't seem like he's listening, as we're not seeing much progress on human rights or even opening the trials to observers or reporters of the people that carried out the murder or allegedly carried out the murder in Istanbul. We're not seeing any change in the Saudi position. I think that President Trump, in kind of the name of everything but Obama, decided that the Iran nuclear deal was a really bad idea. And I'm not saying that they're, you know, that it was perfect by any means, but look where we are now. I think that he made his first foreign trip overseas to Saudi Arabia. That's highly unusual. Usually you go to Mexico or you go to Canada or Europe somewhere. You don't go to Saudi Arabia. He went to Saudi Arabia and they gave him, pardon the pun or whatever it is, a royal treatment, you know, the red carpet, everything, the sword dance. They put his picture up on skyscrapers. You can see it in the film. It's a remarkable trip. And they played him in a sense. And so he loves the Saudis. And after Jamal Khashoggi was murdered, the president said, we're sticking with the Saudis. So you say the Saudis don't care. It doesn't look like the Trump administration cares to pressure them much. Even when his own CIA, they concluded that the murder was ordered by the Crown Prince.
Martin Smith, the Frontline documentary, The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, airs at 10 o'clock tonight on WGVU Public Television. Martin, thank you so much.
Patrick, thank you. Thank you so much, Patrick. I enjoyed being on your show.